You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got the real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history. DuckTales.
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. The movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then
we're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered your wigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
Hello and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster, and guess what, folks? I am Zika-free, and so is this podcast. But more importantly, this is a podcast about Star Trek Beyond. Finally, I know, finally you're getting to hear our thoughts about this TV series that's now in its 50th year of its endurance. Since 1967. So, before I go into the actual bulk of the podcast, just remember, this is something that I've taped weeks ago, and a lot of the thoughts that we had were free-flowing, so I didn't do a whole lot of moderating as far as tone and language, so just remember, if there's stuff that's flying out of our mouths, it's because we're on the road and we're enjoying ourselves, so... But before I go into that, I really wanted to talk about Star Trek Discovery. Now, this came out a little before the Comic-Con, but there was an official sort of trailer in which we see a new ship called Discovery. And in that trailer, we see, instead of a traditional space dock, we see this kind of hollowed out asteroid in which there is a ship that... We get glimpses from the saucer section and the cells and different angles of what we haven't seen before. But then as it starts pulling out, we actually see the actual shape of it. And it, to me, was this kind of weird triangle base, which looked like a tortilla chip out in space. But if you're familiar with Ralph McQuarrie, he's one of those illustrators that you probably have recognized his work before. He's done with Star Wars. And this was a design that was based, I think, back in 1974, in which Roddenberry was hoping to produce another Star Trek series called Star Trek II, or Star Trek Phase II, I should say. And but that's how we get this weird triangle flat design. So it's kind of similar to other Enterprise ships, but it's a very... It's not a very great picture or great design, so as they say, it's in flux, so who knows if that's going to be the final version of it, and I hope it really doesn't, because it looks kind of ugly. I'm not really thrilled with it. And the thing that we get a clue about the series, and a couple of people have pointed out, in the music cues you can hear as the ship is leaving the rock, kind of like Klingon-ish music is playing in the background. So At the time of when that came out, the Comic-Con, this is now almost about a month and a half, so we do have more details since then about that. So we're looking at this basically taking place about 10 years before Kirk takes over for, I guess, the Enterprise. So this is where it gets kind of tricky for me, because I want to know where this is going to be in relation to everything else done before and after. So we had Enterprise that was done about, I forget the how many years before, but the incident took place at 2151. Just kind of give you some perspective. And that was the episode called Broken Bow, in which there was a Klingon that crashes to Earth trying to escape from the Suliban. But that's where that was our first contact, and I'll bring it up in a moment as to why that's important to establish. As the series goes on, at the end of the series, even though it only lasted 4 years, by 2161, which is 10 years later, events happen so that Archer is now pretty much making forward strides into pushing the Federation to make it happen, as well as him becoming an admiral. So the events that we get from the first Enterprise is the NCC 1701, that version of the ship, not the NXO, not the NX 1701, not Archer ship, but the first Federation NCC 1701 ship, was dated at 2245-ish. And the reason why I say ish, because the research I found was that Archer had died the day after that ship was commissioned. So if we go by 2245, 10 years prior to that is for the Star Trek events happen. So figure 2235 will be the year in which Star Trek Discovery will take place. All right, so why is that important in the context of all this? Well, the canon is not official as to when this first contact with the Klingons happened, because from what I've read was that the first contact with the Klingons led to disastrous events, and hence the Klingon and / Federation / Starfleet war happened. But it's not clear, because going back to the 2151 events of Broken Bow, the events were not disastrous. I mean, there was their first contact with the Klingons, and Archer did good enough job to kind of make sure that, you know, things were kind of amicable. But yet we have a different set of facts that are non-canon or canon, depending on how you look at things, which was at 2218, which is supposedly the first contact with the Klingon Empire and the Federation. So that's why I'm not really clear about the whole, where does this take place 10 years prior to Kirk. So that's the one thing that I've been kind of wrangling my head with and trying to figure out what's been going on. So we'll see what happens. But I'm, again, looking forward to this just because I've been wanting to see Star Trek for the longest time back on the small screen. After Enterprise, it was kind of time for us to take a break, but thank God we got the movies. But now, 3 movies later, it's time to go back to its origins. So they did talk about in the press release that we'll get closer to Kirk's mission and get to play with that iconography, which hopefully will do the traditional explore strange new worlds, new civilizations, things of that nature. Our lead is going to be not a captain, but a lieutenant commander, which we already had a lieutenant commander in Benjamin Sisko. So if you know DS9, he basically got the assignment when he was a lieutenant commander, when he was from the Saratoga to Utopian Planitia shipyards on Mars, and then DS9, but he was lieutenant commander. Later on, he does become a captain. So I really don't see, like, this is a brand new thing that's that important that you see this from a lieutenant commander. But in any case, We do have notice that there's going to be at least that's a female who's taking the lead in this position. It could be a woman of color. We don't know. The other thing is that there is going to be at least 7 characters, which is kind of similar in average throughout all the series. I think Next Gen has a little bit more, as well as Voyager, with characters leaving in and out. There is one character name that they came up with called Saru, S-A-R-U. I don't know any more about that. And they're talking about having a more diverse cast, just like in the past, in which that's never been an issue. There will be gay characters on there, and there will even be robots. As to what kind of robots, we can get another Data-ish, or we can get another Death Star Roomba, and just all it does is just clean stuff. So who knows what kind of robots we'll have. The other thing is that because it's going to be on CBS All Access, we are going to see things being pushed a little bit more with language. So every once in a while, someone will lose their mind and utter profanity. And that's okay with me. Plus, we'll get to see a lot of things that normally you would not have been able to see on regular television, since this is going to be not following traditional network rules, but it's not going to be so graphic as, you know, this is a rated R Star Trek or a rated triple X Star Trek. That's a whole different thing that you can find out there. But I'm interested to see where they're going to take it. And with a broad canvas in a non-traditional setting being online, how are they going to tell their stories? And that's a good, that's what I'm looking at. So they'll have, you know, standalone stories, but that each of those stories will tell a bigger arcing story overall. So, but again, the point is each one is self-contained, but again, it tells a bigger story. Unlike, let's say, in Star Trek Enterprise Season 3, the Zindi War, basically, that was a whole arc. Each season or each episode was working off previous ones. So you really had to have watched every single one of them, as opposed to the standalone stories prior to that, which really didn't have much in the way of continuity with what had happened before. There were some recurring characters that had some residual effects from their encounter, but that's about it. So I'm interested, again, seeing where this goes forward. So aside from that, the other thing I wanted to comment, and this is going to now Star Trek Beyond, which I failed to forgot to mention, is the movie poster. If you look at the movie poster, you'll see Jayla, who is the one with the white and black face, and you have Kirk on the left and Spock on the right. It's very reminiscent of the Star Trek The Motion Picture poster, which you had Kirk, Ilya in the middle, and Spock on the right. When I look at that poster and compare that to the current one, Ilya, even though she was a minor character, did play a major part in the movie. But when I looked at this new one, Jayla doesn't really have that much to do. She does play a part, but it's not something that I would think that, oh, she's someone that I would have to watch or pay attention to. Because again, her role is limited, even though it's good to have her there. And hopefully in the future, we'll see that character again. But I just thought the payoff wasn't there for me in regards to that poster. It's a nice homage to that. And it does a lot of cool things that I like in Star Trek in generally. But again, the poster really does not win me over in that respect. There was this one picture of the Enterprise flying out into space, and you just see the word Beyond. To me, that was more simplistic and, to me, better representation. Although, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen Enterprise or the Star Trek Beyond, Enterprise doesn't last very long. So that Beyond stuff and seeing the Enterprise there, it's like, you're not going to see that much longer of that ship. But still, I think you'll be happy with our review and our discussion about it. So we are driving, when you pick up the conversation, to lunch, and then we were going to see Star Trek Beyond again. So we talked about that afterwards, and then on the ride home again, we picked up the conversation. So it's going to be three different points in which you'll hear us talking. So again, enjoy our review of Star Trek Beyond. All right, so we finally got to see this on our own, and we're going to see this a little bit later. Because there's a lot of things that I've missed that I want to make sure that I'm okay with, or like, no, I'm right, this part didn't work, or whatever.
Right, right.
So, your initial impression is?
I liked it. It was different. I think that it completely kind of erased the misstep of Inner Darkness. I like the way it just takes place midway through the five-year mission.
Right.
The things are becoming kind of episodic.
Uh-huh.
I like that. I like the way that, well, spoilers, the Enterprise is kind of destroyed. I thought it was interesting the way that the grouping took place. I was really happy that, you know, okay, Spock is with McCoy. You know, Scotty goes down in a photon torpedo, I think. Right?
It looked like one, like right. The Mark V torpedo that launched, you know, Spock and his death scene in Star Trek II.
There were some missing elements. Like, I really like the fact that the ship is being torn to pieces.
Yeah.
And that they're like, all right, we gotta separate the saucer section. So Kirk is there, and Uhura is there, and there's chaos. And, you know, Uhura knows exactly how to do. Like, all right, you're not going to be able to do this. Like, I'll finish it. I would have loved it, though, if Uhura died. I hate to say it, because that separation moment.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, wow, that'd be cool. I finished the mission. I separated the saucer. But they...
Right, well, she ends up on the planet. But then the bad guy's there, too. So it would have been kind of like, that's quick.
Yeah.
And new mission. I think it worked very well in the sense that it barely mentioned anything about what happened in the last movie.
Which is fine.
And the dynamic between the characters is what was missing. That we finally get, you know, Kirk away from Spock and explore something that we haven't seen in a while, which is the Spock-McCoy relationship.
Right.
Which I know that Carl was like hesitant about coming back because there's not a whole lot for him to do other than like to use some kind of testing device on Kirk to see how his health is doing. That running gag in the last one was just too much.
Right.
So everyone got things to do, and the only problem that I ever had, and this is not a mark against them, but in most Star Trek films, with the exception of Khan and the Borg Queen, we don't have a whole lot of history with any other villain that is an awesome nemesis. And Nemesis sucked. We don't have ever enough time within one movie to set up who the bad guy is, give him his point of view, and then have a payoff. We never get that. Going back to to Nemesis, the whole clone of Picard being the bad guy on Remus is utterly ridiculous. You have the people on Insurrection. I forgot the name. I was going to say the Naboo.
I don't know either.
I was going to say the Naboo.
No.
The Jar Jars. No, the people that... the people that were going to help the Federation with...
The Navi? No, that's Avatar.
That's Avatar. The Smurfs? Oh, no. No, not the Smurfs. Whatever the case is, they were going to help the Federation because the war wasn't going well with the Dominion. So that thing was just a snore. So really, the Borg Queen, you had someone you never saw, but because the Borg existed on Next Generation,
was a good setup for seeing the big brain, so to speak, behind the board. With Khan, you had a good span of, what, almost two decades?
Right.
Before we got to see him back in a much older version, but he was still alive. So you really can't give a whole lot of hurrah behind a villain you never heard of or even cared. Vader, who was awesome to see in the beginning of episode 4, escapes and comes back and is badass in Empire Strikes Back, and that's because he still lives. Loki works because in the Avengers, he was the bad guy, but previous films set him up to be that bad guy. None of the Star Trek films really work without having some kind of history behind something that we've never seen before. And when we don't know who this person is or what their point of view is, it sucks.
Yeah, I didn't understand. I think the villain here, again, was a weak villain. I felt bad for this Elba who had to wear all that makeup for much of the movie.
And I'm like, what did become enemy mine?
And fine, at the end, he's like, okay, so like I was from, you know, the Exo, which the Makos, whatever, from a long forgotten branch of the Federation, which was cool because Laurie got excited, the person I saw it with, because that's links on the Enterprise.
Right.
You know?
The original prequel series that no one watched, but the Makos were like the military arm that were put on Enterprise during the Azindi War to help with the combat situation.
So that was a little golden nugget if you want
to. Right, if you like Enterprise.
Right. But, you know, I mean, I was like, oh, so I didn't understand, like, what he was. What is he, some kind of space vampire? I had no idea.
I saw that on Buck Rogers.
I was confused with this order to the third act, and I was like, all right. And then we go back to the beautiful world they created for this movie. That world was so amazing to me.
M.C. Escher world.
Yeah. Oh, you get higher up there, the gravity's going to be messed up. Okay, so just watch the glass particles as they fall, and then let go, and
yeah,
miss your life. I was fine with that, but I don't know. Overall, happy with it. I thought that they kind of took it to cartoonish levels, that we need this, the song, disruptive sounds, and find that I was like, I'm not sure Monty's going to like this. It was kind of cool, and if you're 12, you're just blown away. I like the fact that they used the song from the original 2009 movie.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I was like,
I think, and according to Simon Pegg, he thought they blew their wad on that song in the trailer, because that should have been the big surprise, that that's what's going to be disrupting the enemy, is the Beastie Boys. So not only do you see that here, see it in the trailer, it's in the movie, and the big point of this whole exercise of them being disrupted is the Beastie Boys as a classic. But I'm like,
classic. That's good. Classic music?
Yeah. Sorry. But I thought it was going to be some weird shit like the Rihanna song, which happens at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Which has nothing to do with other than the fact that this is just a marketing ploy that, hey, if you like Rihanna, you want to
watch this terrible video.
Watch the video, which is, I like the song enough. It's a really terrible looking video in a sense of her makeup, and I don't know.
Makes no sense at all.
All the moves that she's doing, and she's blending the swarm people. I don't know.
You've already got a Scarlet Witch. Thank you.
Next second, thank you. I was wondering why it was tight.
You hit a wall. That's great. So you should be paced now. Okay. But no, I like the spirit of the song, but getting up, keep going, keep challenging. You know,
right.
All right, that's fine.
But usually what they try to do is incorporate the song in a slower beat.
Right, mix it in. But
right.
That's sound mixing. That's the
but, choice. But they work it into the soundtrack theme. So when you hear the actual song, there is a payoff. Then that's what it is. But they didn't do that.
That's old school. How are you going to do that with a Star Trek high-tech movie that takes place in the 24th century?
No. What I'm saying is that, like with most music, like in Superman, you know, can you read my mind sequence?
God, okay, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Oh, wow, it's okay.
If you take out the whole lyric stuff of her talking and just listen to the music,
it holds.
It holds.
It's fine, right.
Right. So if you do that, that's fine. And you somehow incorporate that into the movie, And then when you hear the music with the lyrics, then I'm like, oh, it's the undertone of the music, but it's not even there. All the Star Trek music is doing is relying on past themes from the 2009 movie. And that's fine, but it's not really doing anything new. It wasn't exciting enough that I was engaged and I heard the music. Not like 2009 when, you know, Enterprise is almost being sucked through the black hole and then manages to pull itself out and you hear the music just kind of singing to the images. Here, I was just like, all right. It's okay. So that's why I think if I hear it again on the screen, it should be hopefully a little different in experience, but otherwise, it was just like, there's images-wise, I think it was fantastic. Stuff that I haven't seen before, new shots that I'm just like, oh my god, that just took my breath away. Like, the camera being at the neck of the Enterprise,
right,
and the camera is being pulled back, and you see everything zoomed back. Nice shot. The shot of the Enterprise flying through space, and almost as soon as you can see the space, like the smoke stream in the tunnel, being done the exact same way. Very nice. So there were some fantastic effects and imagery, but
I love it when it's flying through the Yorktown underneath the city.
Yes.
You know, with Kirk and McCoy, Spock and McCoy floating around him above them in the swarm. I was like, that's awesome! Unbelievable, but awesome!
Right. So, again, for all its purposes, it's a great film to finally feel redemption.
So you were pleased.
I was happy with it, and it was on a date night, too, so, you know.
Date night!
It was just like, we had to do it back in Cine Bistro, like we did it for 2009, and we haven't been back since.
Wow! So anniversary!
Pretty much, it's like 7 years later. So we go, and we have, you know, a great dinner, we watched the movie, had a great time, and it was just like, I think that was a good thing the way it all planned out that way. Had I seen it in another way, like at the regular theater, I would have been like, whatever. So, because I had such a great time in 2009, that it's hard really to kind of relive that experience.
Do you think it was as funny as the 2009 version?
Because
I really like the 2009, you got swollen tongue, you got swollen hands, though. Which is funny, I thought.
Yeah, it is fine for that, but not in the exact same way. They had some moments like Spock saying horse shit, which I loved out loud. I laughed out loud because I've never heard Spock curse at all. The touching moments of him looking at the old cast.
Yeah, that was great. That was a nice
got
homage.
To me. Oh my god. So there were some wonderful moments that I love. The green hand reference from Lawrence Wardanus. So there was stuff that's for everyone, and it's something that you can easily jump on board without a whole lot of information about anything previous. This is just a regular episode, and it works on that level. It's self-contained. So
you think it's a self-stealing simple?
Jesus.
I don't know what that is.
Doesn't make a difference unless you know DS9.
I know.
And you're Miles O'Brien.
Well, they didn't explain what it is. They go into it. No. Okay.
All I know is that he needed them. So, aside from that, we had the Star Trek Discovery trailer. Ish. That came out around that exact same time, which is an older design that is reminiscent of the Star Trek Phase 2 ship.
So you're flying around in the Starfleet insignia, are you? Alright, you have fun with that.
Oh, man.
Angular.
It's a flying Dorito ship. Except it has wings.
Fine.
But.
Fine.
As the music kind of implies, and towards the end, you hear this kind of clanging. It sounds very Klingon-ish.
Klingon-ish?
Yes.
Wow, we're making up words now. Okay.
Well, it's Klingon-ish. So,
you know, you can't appreciate Shakespeare unless you hear the original.
Hang on. Yes, I know. Doc.
Wow, it's got
Doc Ben. To be or not to be.
Oh, stop. Please stop.
So, aside from that, it's going to take place...
When?
Even earlier than Enterprise.
No! No! Have you learned nothing? Why? Oh, God, why?
From what I've read, it's supposed to take place in the Prime Universe even earlier.
Mm. Flopping on a network near you.
Not even on a network. Not even.
Right.
Online.
You get the first one free, don't you? And then they're going to put it on online.
I don't think I even want to see the first one free.
You know that HBO freaking took Sesame Street and fired Bob,
I know.
Gordon, Louise? I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? And they're going to show it to the cable station, you're going to pay for it, and then eventually it'll dribble its way on a...
We're getting rid of everybody.
God, it's...
It's HBO Sesame Street.
So painful. Why are you doing this to my childhood?
We're downsizing. We're going in a new direction. Excellent.
Wait, new direction? Or what new. Are we... what's
it's called...
What's the Glee group again? What? No, new direction. New directions?
That's New Kids on the Block.
I don't know.
Going in a new
That's
direction.
Your fault. That's not... Wait, Neutron Dance? Wait.
Safety Dance.
Oh.
But,
wow. We're free associating badly. This is not
yes, we are. No, but what was the other... there's a term to gentrification. That's what's going to happen to Sesame Street. They're going to get rid of the trash. They're going to put a Whole Foods Market, Starbucks, any other millennial spot in Sesame Street, and jack up the rent, and that's what's going to happen. The Muppets will get out. They're going to have to go across the street and go to...
Man, come on, they did the game of chairs thing. Come on, that was brilliant.
It's not our Sesame Street anymore. It's not...
We're saying that way too much.
Yes, we are.
Because we're too old for this shit. That's... Thank you, Danny Glover, for...
Just don't sit on a toilet, because it's going to explode. So.
Guys like you don't die on toilets, Monty.
No. Guys like me do die on toilets.
Go, Elvis!
Exactly. All right, so... I think that's all I have for right now until we see the movie again.
And refresh our memories. It's just been a week or two.
Yeah.
And happy to give it my money again. Sure, absolutely.
Yeah, because honestly, there is nothing out there until this week.
Suicide Squad.
Suicide Squad.
Yay, Suicide Squad.
I've been hearing so far. Right. So I'm like.
Will Smith.
Margot Robbie.
Margot Robbie, great. Jared Everyone Leto. Else, even like Captain Boomerang guys, great. Everyone else, like,
yeah, so.
One-liners, cartoony, but we'll see it.
Right. Nonetheless.
Make your opinion.
Make it so.
It worked for you better this time?
Second time around, I actually liked it better. I went in with, okay, I know this bad guy has a history because of Starfleet. So I went in as, I'm the villain. I know who I am.
Right, right.
No one else knows my backstory.
Right, I tried to figure it out too.
And it when I went with that mind, that now I get it. I know what he was trying to accomplish. It's crap, but I understood his point about the Federation trying to be what it used to be. Sitting down with the enemy is not what he fought for.
The whole, you know, yeah, Federation has never been a military organization. Kind of it has been. Folks have had for dozens of years.
Right. They always fought. No, our mission is to explore, not to fight.
But why do you have all these weapons? Why do you have an XO on your ship then?
Right. So
the Zindi War thing. Well, yeah, but you know what? The Dominion. What? Hey.
Yeah. And they brought up the Romulan War, which we haven't seen yet, but that's also been a big storyline. So conflict in space is what the problem is.
Are you recording?
Yes. The conflict in space is what's our problem. We can be civilized and all that amongst ourselves, but there's going to be people that's going to be shitting all over us.
I was watching, like, there's just huge loopholes in this.
even with that.
It was more enjoyable. It was fine.
Yeah.
It was still fine. I still enjoyed it.
Yeah. And I think the 3D effect that we saw, seeing certain sequences such as much better.
Much better.
I really enjoyed Yorktown that much more.
Oh, it's beautiful. It's fucking beautiful.
So I was just stunned just how...
Just the 3D effect.
The 3D effect.
You got to see the layers.
Right.
Then you were like, wow, right. I get it now.
You know, again, seeing the Franklin flying below, and you've seen the cityscape above, and it was just like...
Mind-blowing. You're like, wow.
Yeah.
Very happy.
So, is this something that, because it was the 50th anniversary, does it work to get new fans? Or is it just like, well, it's enough that it redeems itself?
That's a time question.
Right.
You know, because the idea is that here's our best bet.
Right.
We put it out for you during the summer blockbuster season. You've been looking forward to it. Because you like the 2009 one.
Right.
We'll forget the 2013 one. That didn't happen.
Right.
But, you know, we'll just go with that and see.
Right.
And then we're going to do the TV show again. For maybe, yeah, you guys subscribe. Whatever that's going to happen.
But it's not as if this is Star Wars big.
It's culty. It's still culty. It's not, it doesn't have Disney backing.
No.
It doesn't have Disney dollars.
No, it doesn't. But I think because of fans like us, we want a good movie. This was
we got a good movie.
It was decent enough. And again, you said it perfectly. Like, you would own this.
Mm-hmm.
You would own Civil War, Captain America: Civil War. Because, right.
But this I got to support.
Yeah.
Because this is in my blood.
Right.
The Marvel stuff's still new.
Right.
This stuff is in my, you know, my dad watched this show. Come on, you know.
But. How many times did you say the Scotty called?
Like 9/11. I'm like, Jesus.
Sorry, you're
just gonna call her, even though I'm calling her Jane, that's her name,
right.
You're still calling her Lassie,
right.
Like a dog. But no, it's okay, fine.
It's a term of endearment.
Lassie.
I don't know.
Lassie, go home. Lassie.
But from what I was trying to understand, his background for Kral was that there's only 3 people that were left. Everybody else were like drones.
So that didn't make sense to me. I'm
right.
Like, wait a minute.
So,
what's going on?
So he had the technology to, I guess, trap people down,
eat them in his space vampire way to make himself look younger, which is kind of like...
But he also adapted whatever things about their traits, whatever, so he wasn't human at all.
Right.
And even towards the end, he looks somewhat back to himself, which he said... You know, I haven't been myself in such a long time.
Yeah, look, I've got teeth.
Got teeth, a lot of big teeth. But the one moment that they didn't do, Kirk is struggling to pull down the lever.
Right.
And and Edison flies up, and we're like, oh, is he going to do this moment where he's going to redeem himself? No.
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 He's doing the lotso.
And that's great. They didn't fall into that trap. Kirk didn't get a woman. You didn't get laid. But, the exhilaration is seeing the interaction with everybody, getting their moments. Even, I thought about, why didn't her then get a big moment? No, she did. She was the one that actually pushed it together
about Edison
because of her linguistics background. That's what makes sense, that she would get it and no one else did, that connection.
I don't know.
So...
Still a lot to digest, even though a simplistic plot.
Yeah.
Relatively, very, very cliche, you know? But I do like the way it's like, yeah, we do the same thing over and over. It's like us at our jobs.
Right.
You know, we get bored, but we do the job.
And that was the connection, too, that he was trying to say, that he is like Kirk, or somewhat similar, that Edison and Kirk were like, they were stuck. The problem lies is that because Edison got stuck, he never progressed past that point. But because now Kirk is now past this point, he feels renewed, regenerated, that he's looking forward, not being stuck like Edison is.
And that the realization that he's coming to his own when he says, you know, if I take this vice, I'm going to get to fly. No, you don't get to fly.
Right.
Yeah, that's so boring. I'm not doing that.
Right. So that's where, I connect with Kirk a lot and how he felt in his birthday, like mine coming up, that hopefully mine will not feel like I'm stuck.
You need an adventure, Monty.
Yes, I do.
Let's get some tequila. Or tequiza, as Kevin Troy calls it.
It's distilled by an old Russian woman.
Oh, God.
Whatever. So, again, I'm glad I got to see this with you. I really enjoyed this a lot more.
I'm sorry we didn't get to see it in IMAX. It should be even better in IMAX. When you see it in IMAX, it goes off the screen a little bit. It's kind of...
No, that's all right. But, again, seeing it in a reclining seat...
Thank you, Regal.
And seeing so much more detail, like with the people running on the side of the ship. Yeah,
that was a great shot.
So I'm like, holy crap! There's so much detail that I just left out. And again, credit to Justin Lin. I really now want to see the Fast and the Furious Tokyo Drift, just to see what he had.
What he brings to the franchise,
right? So. Now, I'm just wondering what's going to happen with the next one if he comes back, which I say, no.
Don't do it.
Right.
Don't fall in the trap.
Don't do it, JJ. And then we get an Into Darkness.
Or Joss.
And we get an Into Darkness Part 2. The Age of Ultron. So.
Several quarts of blood.
Well, you know, it's green blood, so really, when you compare the hemoglobins to the red blood cells, you're really talking about not a whole lot.
And then he gets, and then what is that costume he's wearing then? Kirk doesn't have that costume, so that's, I thought that
no,
was
No, he
costume.
Picked it off someone from the Franklin.
That's what I thought. So you're wearing Franklin uniforms. When they crash, the Franklin crashes in the river and comes up in the thing,
yeah.
And the cadets are coming out or whatever, yeah. They're wearing Spock's uniform from the Franklin
right.
ship. And I was like, what?
Or how did... Well, let me clarify. Okay, Krall gets out after he crashes the ship into the Franklin.
Right, because that's... So I have no problem with that because they had the invasive kind of weird...
Right, I understand
thing.
That. It's fine. But he dressed in gold outfits. So
kills some people.
He killed some red shirt. We don't know... I've never seen another body that was naked, that he just ripped off their clothes and just, hey... This fits. Okay. And then puts it on. That bugged me.
But let's keep nitpicking. Keep nitpicking.
But aside from all that, again, the technology about whatever it was that was left there on that planet, and it seemed like it was so damn close to the Yorktown, why... The Yorktown never sent a ship to investigate or probe it or whatever. I mean,
okay, so let
you're there, the frontier.
Right. So let me get this straight. So you're a Starfleet crew that crashed 100 years ago. You become space vampires of some sort,
yeah.
So you can prolong your life. There's three of you, although.
So
three,
supposedly
two,
three of you and a drone army or something.
Okay, then you adapt from the technology because it's kind of a Borg-like thing.
Right.
You can't fix your ship. And yet, Jayla, who's been there for like 10 years...
Is able to do this.
And you're able to launch your ship into space using backward physics, which, no, the slingshot effect doesn't work that way. It just, you know, maybe if you're orbiting in a gravity-free environment, fine, I'll give you that. But you don't plummet toward the Earth, reaching terminal velocity, and then zoom up and switch directions. The G-force alone would kill you. I thought it was funny. It was like, okay, now, Mr. Chekhov. No, Chekhov's passed out because the G-forces.
But they had seatbelts.
They did.
Well, for the three of them, they had seatbelts. Everyone else is like, squished to the front of the...
Everyone else is pissed.
So...
There were some really unnecessary scenes. Just in writing screenplays, just the idea about going to Yorktown, being there for like what, maybe 10 minutes, and then leaving. Like, I'll assemble the crew because we got the most advanced ship here with the best navigational thing. And, yeah, the one we have here is still under construction. We can't do that. But it's like, wow. Okay, so you spend no time at the space dock. You know, you replenish your ship. Fine, I'll give you that.
I mean, poor Sewell didn't even get
right,
the kiss.
Right. Yeah. That's what I was
or
thinking.
Nothing. I mean, he's been on shore leave. I mean, come on. He needs to get some space action.
Wouldn't you think you'd have new crew members that, like, yeah...
Kind of rotate them out.
Yeah, I mean...
Hey, you know, I've done my tour, you know...
It's like a cruise ship. I've been here for 10 months!
Right.
I'm fucking going nuts!
The NVT is nuts. So, that's... fine.
That was unbelievable. And then, you don't do that. You know, that's bad writing. And oh god, there's another scene that bothered me like that. That just that whole bit with the woman with the artifact. Oh, you hit it here in the ship. Oh, it's here in the ship. It's useless. What is this? Are we just filling time?
Well, apparently it was just like he knew something was up, and he got the drop on her. We're figuring out. All right, check up.
Right.
While you're doing that, I'm going to look for this fake thing that this crawl guy wants. And then she gets killed. Which
crushed by the Enterprise.
A la Prometheus, yes. Like you said.
And yet somehow we're able to outrun this, the flipping, like, flapjack of the Enterprise. Yeah, okay. So, don't think about it too much. That's the way you enjoy it. Just don't think about it too much.
After seeing, and Simon Pegg actually comments like, how can you crash the Enterprise again? You know, he said, you did this in, you know, Star Trek 3, you did this in Generations. Right. It makes no sense. But the way he and Justin Lin were going about this was that you're separating the main characters from another character, and you separating them all away from each other.
Yeah, I had no problem with that. Surprisingly, I was like, this is the most beautiful scene I've seen like this in a long time, and I've never seen the Enterprise destroyed this way before.
Right, cut its throat, and then there goes that neck, and I'm like, shit. Then the cells were one thing, but
right, the cells are gone in seconds. Did it warp? What are we doing? Why is it still here? The cells, they're gone!
Yeah.
Wow, that's fucked up. The design of this ship really sucks.
But again, it was just like, it would have been nice to see Uhura do that Kobayashi Maru moment, which he almost did with the saucer section.
Right.
But she still survives in the end because whatever.
Because the main bad guy's on the ship, by the way.
Right.
He didn't catch the first time. Like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
So, but whatever the case is. Again, the second time around, it worked that much better. Anton didn't get a whole lot that was memorable, but you know, he's supporting cast.
He gets a few moments, a handful of moments.
Yeah, the little chuckle about the old woman making Russia.
Right, yeah,
like Chekhov would normally do. You know, many times. You know,
just trying to get laid.
Who isn't? And I'm kind of happy the way things turned out, with all the little problems that we had are so minor compared to the overall picture.
It's a good movie. It's a little cartoony, but it's fine. I mean, the thing is, it's not JJ's movie, and the theme of it, it's just a rocking fun movie.
Yeah,
it does what it's supposed to do. Yeah, it's got its subplots, it's got its holes. But the thing is, did you have a good time? Yes. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I had a fucking good time.
And I think that's what was missing from the last one. I mean, granted, you have, you know, a larger ship chasing the Enterprise and then crashing. And then you had this big fight scene, but it didn't really amount to much of anything. Kind of like this, but you actually didn't mind the subplot problems they had anyway, but you want the bad guy not to win, and everyone does their job, and that's what's enjoyable about this round. We get so caught up in what I think that should work on paper, and what the fans want is not exactly the real thing. They should have never brought in Khan, and I'm the biggest one that have voted saying, you know what, we should bring back Khan, but the Khan that we got is not the Khan that we deserved.
Oh god, really?
But it's true. We got Khan.
Well, the thing is, you gotta pull him out sometime. You know? And they chose the second movie. Not the best idea. But again, I think an experiment that didn't work out the way everyone hoped. You know? I am honestly surprised that this movie came out with the way that movie fared. In the Dark just didn't do that well.
Right.
You know, but okay, 50th anniversary.
And I think that's...
Sure. And people like this crew. So fine, here you go.
Yeah, if this wasn't going to be coming out on the 50th, this would not have been...
I don't think it
would have been made for a third time. So, but because we got this made, we're getting the new truck series, and filming begins January. of next year. And then we'll get the new series later than that year.
Yeah,
but
the momentum keeps up, I would think. I mean, they're going to do it, but it's going to be like, yeah, well, we got one season of this.
Yeah, we'll see the experiment by CBS All Access. Let's see how that works out for them. But
is there other plans for a fourth Trek movie? Like you said, with Chris Hemsworth. Maybe.
Chris Hemsworth is coming back. So, like we talked about, I don't want this to be a Field of Dreams sequence in space where I'm going to play catch with my dad or Thor.
Here, catch!
You're not worthy!
Still in here.
Or the secretary from Ghostbusters.
Kevin. That's god awful.
God awful.
Not bad, but just the whole.
No, it was. Well, he has good comedic timing. It's just bad the way it was just what was pulled off.
I don't know. I liked that I'd never seen the Enterprise go against a fleet of a swarm, which, yeah, Spock's right. Yeah, we're not prepared for this shit. I'm gonna be torn up. And we are. But again, how they're controlling this stuff? No. There are people in those things.
Well,
Spock and McCoy throw out. I mean, I guess they launched the emergency escape thing.
Yeah, they did. And that's how they actually got aboard.
Twice. Which I'm like, I don't know if I buy that. But okay, fine. Because wouldn't they be sucked up to space too?
Well, they were holding on to stuff.
But you know what I mean?
I know, but they were prepared. They were prepared.
It doesn't seem, I mean, you're in space. So you eject the pilot out. Do you care about the vessel? Why does the vessel seal itself up immediately? So, you know, I mean, I don't know.
But again, the Star Trek soundtrack is almost forgettable completely through, except for, you know, a couple of climax moments or certain early themes, but It didn't ring in a spectacular fashion.
It doesn't bring anything new to the table.
No, it doesn't. And that's, for me, the biggest disappointment. Again, enjoyable movie, but the soundtrack could have been so much better. But again, Michael Giacchino, whatever his last name, I can't pronounce, is now doing the third movie of this series. And
Monty, you're not a Trekkie, you're a tracker.
Tracker.
You're a sound tracker.
So, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm interested to see how this new ship in the Flying Taco, Flying Dorito ship, fares on the small screen.
Hopefully it'll be alright.
Well, shit, I mean, they got a shitload of good people. Brian Fuller, who's done a couple of great series. Pushing Up Daisies is one of my favorites. Didn't last long.
Yeah, but it's pre-Enterprise.
I know. And then we have Nicholas.
So you don't even have Kirk. You don't have anyone.
We have Nicholas Meyer, who, director.
He's involved in this?
He's one of the writers.
Oh, okay.
So that's another selling point that got me hooked on this, so.
Prequels never work on TV.
I know. As long as they have an opening piece of music that doesn't have lyrics, I think we're in good shape.
It's been a long time.
Wow.
Getting here from there.
Yeah, that's
Russell Watson.
Why do you know that name?
He is the name that has poisoned Star Trek.
No, he's just... He just got a check, man.
Cut the check!
Oh, wow. So the villains, though, they were just kind of...
The what?
Yeah, the villains in the movie, they're just kind of weird. Not really memorable.
Yeah, I mean, that's... Again, Star Trek has always had that problem. If you don't have history, it's hard to do it within a couple hours and make it...
Yeah, the little pantless things had just taken the device, they would have had this whole problem.
Oh, thank you. It's very nice.
Great, thanks. Are you going to be peaceful now? That's great. Okay. Bye. And that's it. Then they get destroyed, and then whatever happens. I don't know. Tapestries, Monty. They're pulling one string.
Well, you see, I thought I should be in command.
We'll see.
So again, we still don't know about this universe. Oh, let me go back to Into 2009.
Okay.
Jen pointed out something to me, and I'm pretty sure she's correct, but I need you to double check me.
Sure.
That ship, that the Romulans, the mining ship.
Right.
When Romulus was destroyed with the red matter.
Vulcan gets destroyed with the red matter.
Right.
Why did you say Romulus?
Because Romulus was destroyed. They blame he the Nero blames Spock.
Okay, right, the past.
Right. So he went into the past to destroy Vulcan.
Right. Because he wants Spock to watch
right.
his plant destroyed.
Right.
Because he saw his plant destroyed okay. with his wife on and everything.
So we still then have Romulus then.
Yes.
Okay. Then I was wrong. Okay.
It's only destroyed in the future universe.
In the future universe, but that may not happen because of...
With him coming back, they create an alternate timeline.
Right.
Where Vulcans are destroyed.
Right.
What? And suddenly... Vulcans are endangered species.
Right. And they have to make little Vulcans.
Yes.
Green-blooded fucking Vulcans.
So my question though was, wait, what? How old is Spock? I want to see that nameplate.
Well, that's the other thing.
Because I thought it was a really short time. I was like, what?
Well, he's as old as 200-something. But if you look at the whole going back in time shit...
Right.
That's a whole other... Even though it was seconds, he went back a couple of, like 100 years or so. And then he still lived, you know, some more years after that. So I'm not sure with time travel, do you count all those years you lived, even though it only became seconds?
Yeah, and I'm sorry, if some really famous celebrity that helped form Starfleet time travel dies, wouldn't you know about it instantly? Why did the Vulcans have to tell Spock? Wouldn't it be like, don't they have CNN constantly streaming? If, you know, If Kirk can sit there and tell his mom, like, then his birthday, wouldn't you know immediately? You know what I mean?
Yeah, well,
don't you have the internet?
Which he never did. It's like, hi mom.
He never called his mom.
Hi, mom. Did you get my check, honey? Yes, I did. Thank you. Did you get something nice for yourself? Well, not yet. I didn't get a chance.
Maybe some glasses.
Maybe some nice socks. Some good quality socks, maybe. I could use that because, you know, I get the space athlete's foot out here. It's really bad.
Your Luke Crate joke was amazing. That was perfect.
Oh, yeah. That's a Spock gave the Luke Crate. Oh, look. It's the gas from the original series.
It lights up in the back.
Spock Crate. I mean, it still gets to me for him to watch his predecessor in that cast photo. It's just...
I don't remember this.
Man, Jim got fat. And Uhura. Wow, you really let yourself go. Maybe we shouldn't see other people.
What? And Sulu is straight? He has a
Wait
daughter.
A minute. What did he have to have a daughter?
He has a daughter, right. That could work out.
Well,
maybe.
Tamora, like you said in that audiobook, she dies, right?
Right.
So
No, it's fake. It's fake. It's because the captain's daughter is. It's from that planet, the pleasure planet.
Uh-huh.
With the rabbits. That's all it is.
Oh, so it's a
twist
copy.
On that.
Okay.
It's a Peter David book. It wraps around itself.
Okay.
So she never dies.
There you go.
And it's an Enterprise B book. I think it's pretty impressive.
Yes, Captain Harriman, who killed James T. How he could ever live that down, I will never, ever know.
Yeah, you do Speed, too, and then you come up here? No, Speed, and then you... Yeah. You and Ferris, and then, yeah, I don't know, whatever.
Tuesday. Your career will be over by Tuesday. I mean... Here's the other problem, too. That
risk is part of the job if you're going to sit in that chair.
It's not so much risk, it's the fact that Starfleet is so fucked up with crappy ships, that don't have working transporters all the time. They don't have working shields, or at least you'll have someone counting down how effective they are when you're getting your ass kicked. And you wind up being the only ship that no one else can help with. So you're fucked.
Welcome
so, no thanks. How many times has that happened through that franchise that I'm just like, especially Star Trek V? You know, we gotta get you guys back onto the ship. Why aren't the transporters working? Well, you know, you took her out for a spin in Voyage Home, and that's what happened.
No, Voyage Home, you were in a Klingon
ship. No. At the very end, let's take her out there. Let's see what happens. And then Scotty says, see, now this is what I gotta fucking do. I gotta fix your shit. And then, of course, William Shatner dumbed down Scotty's role. I know this ship like I know the back of my hand.
Yes.
And then bonks themselves out, and that was so disgusting.
Purist. Well, you're right. It's the old crew. It's the movie old crew. It's not.
I know, but even then, you know, Next Generation had the exact same problem with shields failing. You know,
Troy taking the pilot of the ship and crashing it. Good job. The one time we had to do something important, you crashed the ship.
And they just saying shit. And then we got Spock saying horse shit. So, complete anarchy.
You just keep on laughing.
I have to. So, the problem lies is just like old Spock versus new Spock. New Spock is not going to have the exact same experience.
No, he can't.
Old
Spock's mom is still alive for a long time.
Right, so...
Different actresses, but, you know, still alive.
Right, and so was his dad. Well, his dad is still around somewhat-ish. No, his dad should be dead. Because if Spock is dead, Sarek should be dead as a doornail by this time. So the question is... I lost my question.
What is the question, Monty? I don't know.
What is the ultimate answer to the life, universe, and everything?
42. What you get when you multiply what?
7 times 9? Something like that. I can't forget.
Or something wrong with this damn universe.
Yeah. No, it was just, again, this the universe that we know now with this JJ-verse has to be completely different. Things cannot happen with we get Voyager, we get DS9, we get Next Generation characters.
We're not going to get that.
No, I know that. I'm just saying someone needs to say this is where we're going and define that so we can tell those new stories again.
But you'll never get that because it's too expensive to do movies.
No, but you can still do that in the Star Trek books. You know, reinvigorate the whole series line.
People don't read books anymore, though. They read more e-books.
I know. But if they go back to my old podcast on page 49 and read Star Trek the podcast.
That's a great Star Trek one. The book. I really enjoyed that.
So I am eager to get back into reading Star Trek books. And I started, again, the nonfiction book, Star Trek the 50 Years. By these two geeky, nerdy guys.
So trying to save wavelength with.
Yeah.
That you've mind-melded with, Monty.
Which I'm going to email as soon as I get home. But that's the kind of thing that I, as much as I know of their history, I love getting into that whole background storyline, how things worked from their point of view, or what didn't work, and all those little kind of dirty secrets.
You mean...
Oh. And then the one line that I picked up from one of the interviews from the casting an interview, the number of days that Kirk says.
Right, 966.
Right, and what's the reference?
That's the year that the show started.
There you go!
Yeah, I've been watching that. The Easter eggs. Plenty of Easter eggs out there.
So that's one of those things that I'm like, thank you. Now I got it.
All right, so that ends, unfortunately, our podcast for today. So thank you very much for listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show. I really hope you enjoyed listening to us. And I really want us to get this going again, and hopefully things will be better, in which Gene and I's schedule will be a lot more in tune. But again, we managed to do what we can with whatever time we have to get things done together. So I can't promise when that will happen again, but again, I work my hardest to get things done, to produce the shows one way or another. So again, follow me on the various social networks that are out there. Email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. So again, thank you very much for listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.